There were giants in the land in those days.
Giants?
Intellectual giants. And the greatest of these was...
Yes, yes. Who was he?
He was called the most disappointed man in America.
Oh?
He was called the greatest orator the world had heard since the time of the Greek Demosthenes. His name is third on the list in the Hall of Fame, preceded only by those of Washington and Lincoln.
I know. Yes, that's it. I do know. You're talking about the man who wrote the dictionary.
You're wrong. It's the tragedy of this man's life that you and many other people think of him chiefly as the author of a dictionary. A dictionary compiled by another man of the same name. From Greenville, South Carolina, Bob Jones University presents Miracles. A man's life is but an empty, broken shell without an inward source of power. God's power alone can take a life and bind it into a dynamic, moving force. Truly great men are God's men. Our trailblazer must always be honored in our country for two things. He was the statesman and orator who, in a turbulent time of discord and uncertainty, upheld the integrity of the Union and the supremacy of the Constitution. His opinions regarding the nature of the Union were tested 30 years later in the fiery crucibles of civil war and vindicated. His opinions regarding the supremacy of the Constitution have become part of our national consciousness. This man knew the Constitution. He started the learning process at the age of 8. While the other boys his age played games in a vacant field, he could be found in Mrs. Smith's front yard or next door at Mrs. Green's.
Almost finished?
Yes, ma'am.
Really, I don't see why you want to work around the yard here for me when you could be out playing with the boys over in the vacant lot.
Well...
You want something very special, don't you? Isn't that what you're trying to earn some money for?
Oh, yes, ma'am. I do.
I'll tell you what. Today, you get 2 nickels instead of 1 for your good job.
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Green. That just makes enough. 25 cents. That's all I needed to get it. Thanks again. Oh, boy!
It doesn't take an 8-year-old boy very long to get what his heart is set upon when he has 25 cents.
Mrs. Green!
Yes?
I got it! Look!
A handkerchief? I don't understand. Well, why are you so anxious to get a handkerchief?
No, look, really. See? Printed all over it.
Why, it's our Constitution. Printed half on this side and half on the other. The Constitution of our United States of America.
Years after this incident, our trailblazer could say of this Constitution,
there is not an article, section, clause, phrase, a word, a syllable, or even a comma, which I have not studied and pondered in every relation and every construction of which it was capable.
And to this man and his impressive oratory, the people of the nation owe their traditional conviction of the supreme value of the Constitution. But let's go backward in time, back to a cold day in New Hampshire. The calendar indicated that Christmas had come and gone, and the new year, 1782, was already some 18 days old. 8 eager faces greeted their father as he came from the bedroom where their mother was.
Is it a boy or a girl, Father?
Children, not so loud. You have a fine new baby brother.
Oh!
The fine new baby brother was the 9th child in a family of 10 children, a family of hard-working children. But so frail a child was our trailblazer that he was excused from the hard labor of the farm. And in the schoolroom, there was another problem.
Children. Children, let's come to attention. We're going to begin with our recitation period. Let's see. We'll start with this row first and recite in order.
It was a...
Children. All right, young man, speak up. Don't you have your lesson prepared?
Yes, ma'am. I...
We'll hear from you later on, I hope.
So timid that he couldn't recite a declamation in the presence of his fellow students in the country school he attended. Our trailblazer doesn't remember how early he learned to read, but he once said,
I cannot recollect a time when I could not read the Bible.
And of this book, he said in later years,
I have read through the Bible many times. I now make it a practice to go through it once a year. It is the book of all others for lawyers as well as for divines. I pity the man that cannot find in it a rich supply of thought and rules for his conduct. It fits a man for life. It prepares him for death.
From the village school and Exeter Academy, he entered Dartmouth College at the age of 15. After 2 years, he unselfishly interrupted his college course for the sake of his older brother, Ezekiel. He taught school and laboriously copied deeds to earn enough money to help Ezekiel get an education. After studying law in Boston, our trailblazer was admitted to the bar in 1805. His rise to prominence was rapid. The delicate lad had grown into a man of magnificent and impressive physique. The timid schoolboy, who couldn't speak a piece in school, had become a skilled debater and an orator of unsurpassed eloquence. And so in 1813, our trailblazer was sent to Congress. His permanent fame as a constitutional lawyer was assured by his brilliant argument in the famous Dartmouth College case in 1817, and in a later case involving the right of New York State to grant control of its waterways to private corporations. Both cases involved the Constitution. It was the 200th anniversary of the landing of the Pilgrims when his oration put our trailblazer into the position of the leading orator in America. Fame increased after the oration at the laying of the cornerstone of Bunker Hill Monument, and by eulogies of John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, who died on the same day, July 4th, 1826. Time was passing swiftly. Days were difficult for America. The slavery issue was becoming prominent. But most important was the question of the Union itself.
The government is not a league nor a confederacy. It is not a loose confederation of sovereign states, but a union. A union with necessary powers to maintain and preserve itself. Secession is utterly unthinkable.
The great contest was not then over slavery, but over the tariff. Time was marching on. One state proposed to nullify the national tariff laws. In 1830, General Hayne asserted the doctrine of nullification and attempted to justify his state in seceding. It was the reply of our trailblazer that electrified the country, closing with the immortal sentence that has become a part of our national heritage.
Liberty and union, now and forever, one and inseparable.
This speech was called the greatest political speech of the 19th century. Years were passing. Our trailblazer's passion for the Union made him favor successive compromise rather than courses which he felt must lead to war. It was this policy which led to one fatal speech on the so-called Clay Compromise involving the Fugitive Slave Law. It was this speech that cost him the presidency. His political disappointments were bitter. His honors, national and international, were many. But his great ambition was never realized. Twice he became Secretary of State, but he never reached the presidency. Four times he was his party's logical candidate for president, and four times other men were nominated. No, our trailblazer, Daniel Webster, never became president of the United States. But not only was Daniel Webster explicit in his beliefs about our Constitution, this man of giant intellect was also explicit in his endorsement of the Christian faith.
I believe Jesus Christ to be the Son of God. The miracles which he wrought establish in my mind his personal authority and render it proper for me to believe whatever he asserts. I believe, therefore, all his declarations, as well as when he declares himself to be the Son of God, as when he declares any other proposition. And I believe that there is no other way of salvation than through the merits of his atonement. If I could comprehend him, he could be no greater than myself. I feel that I need a superhuman Savior, one so great and glorious that I cannot comprehend it.
The leaves were turning red and brown in New Hampshire. The air was still. A gray-haired physician sat by the bed of a dying man, listening quietly.
My general wish on earth has been to do my Maker's will. I thank him now for all the mercies that surround me. That there is a God, all must acknowledge. I see him in all the wondrous works. Himself, how wondrous. What would the condition of any of us be if we had not the hope of immortality? Thank God. The gospel of Jesus Christ brought life and immortality to light, rescued it, brought it to light.
And so passed away America's greatest orator, one of her greatest statesmen, a lover of peace, a lover of the Union, a lover of the Constitution. A man who began his life in poverty, won his way over physical and temperament handicaps, achieved every national honor except the presidency, and died amid the profound and sincere sorrow of his fellow citizens. When Webster was asked throughout his lifetime the question, "What is the most important thought that ever entered your mind?" he answered slowly and impressively,
"My individual responsibility to God. My individual responsibility to God."
Miracles is a transcribed production of Bob Jones University in Greenville, South Carolina.